My name is Victor Kubik, and welcome to another edition of Inside United. Today we have a returning guest. His name is Gary Petty, that we all know very well. He's been on for about four other podcasts, and we've talked about various subjects. But we've been doing a serial podcast about his latest book, The Mercy Effect. The Mercy Effect, that is a manual, I would say, or an explanation about how to deal with conflict. So welcome to Inside United, Gary.
It's good to be here again.
Today we will deal with Chapter 6, dealing with the five levels of conflict. But before we get into that, I would like to mention that the book, The Mercy Effect, is available on Amazon. The Mercy Effect, Gary Petty. So, Gary, we're very happy to have you be able to talk to us.
It's great to be here. And this subject that we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about five levels of conflict. Now, I didn't come up with these five levels myself. Now, some of the explanations I have are, of course, my ideas. But it comes from a book called Antagonist in the Church by Kenneth Hawk. And he came up with five levels of conflict, you know, starting with ones that are easily to be dealt with to the ones that are the ones that almost reach a point where you can't actually heal them. You know, we've already dealt with how our basic conflict has to, it's inside of us, between us and God. We had to fix that to try to help deal with all these conflicts we have with human beings all the time. What we have here, though, in this chapter is, okay, if we start with the simplest kind of conflict, which the simplest kind of conflict is problems to solve. Okay, well, when we start with that, problems to solve, those are fairly simple. If people just, you know, they're not driven by pride and, you know, all these other things we've talked about, you know, that two people can sit down or a group of people. I mean, we do that all the time in business and marriage. This is the simplest level of conflict. Okay, we have a problem to solve. When people have a similar goal, they have the same value system, problems to solve are the simplest things to do. Now, you would think that, but let's think about just the world we live in. You know, just think of anything that happens in a local town or in a national scene. It seems like nobody can solve any problems because there's too many ideas. There's too many different viewpoints, and it can't be solved. But so at this level, for Christians, we should be able to deal with the problems to solve as long as we have the same sort of value system. And we can learn to say, look at each other and say, you know what? There are certain disagreements that don't matter. We're just human beings. We're not going to agree on everything. And sometimes you can say, okay, I'll give in because it's not a matter of morality. It's not, okay, on this situation, I'll give in. Problems to solve is the simplest level.
And, you know, I've taken that principle here, too, with my wife. You know, we have things to discuss. And I really found that just by listening very carefully and by talking through it in a peaceful way was something that really helped me, you know, a direct result, you know, of this book.
So much of it is just listening to the other person. And my mind races all the time. And sometimes if I'm not careful, someone will get halfway through an explanation and I'm jumping in to say something and I'm not listening to the whole thing. At the problems to solve level, so much of it is just listening. Because a lot of times you can come to the conclusion, oh, well, if that's what you want, I don't care. You know, because my feelings on that aren't that strong or whatever. Now, if we can't work through things at that level, the next level is disagreements. Now, in disagreements, there's a much more, shall we say, emotional attachment to what we're doing. In other words, this is where if the two people are looking at a house and the one person says, the wife says, I have to have an extra room for visitors. So I need that room. And he's looking at it and saying, no, I need that or my office. That now that it's not just a matter of having problems to solve. At that point, sometimes you're actually having, well, there's no other room. We got to use the same room. We actually have a disagreement where somebody has to either compromise. You have to come up with a real solution. At that level, it takes a lot more work. It takes a lot more work. But once again, even at that level, if we're seeing a bigger picture, if we're not trying to force our will on the other, the five things we've talked about over and over again in terms of the types of or the reasons for conflict, which is what we've covered so far, you know, the five main reasons for conflict. If we're dealing with those, even at the disagreement level, we can learn to deal with each other, and we can learn that certain times you just have to compromise.
And you know, you bring the pride element, which is like number two through the whole book, all the way through, and that's one of the biggest roadblocks in being able to live peacefully.
Yes. And that's why as we go through these five levels, you'll see each one gets worse. Okay, problem to solve. Okay. Reasonable people can do that. Disagreements, reasonable people can still work through that, but there is a much more emotional intensity involved. In a disagreement, you might get a little angry or a little frustrated. But still, clear-minded people who are looking at the other basic principles and self-aware, they're still able to work through disagreements. If you can't do that, what happens is you move on to the third level of conflict, which is a contest. Now you're looking for not win-win situations, you're looking for win-lose situations. But I've got to win this contest. And that's where it really gets intense.
And if you could walk us through that.
Yeah, the thing is about the contest level is in your mind, either your need or you're so right. Now, there are times where you can't backstep. I mean, it's a moral issue. You know what I mean? You've got some principle of God, and I talk about that in the book, that you can't just, you can't compromise where it's inappropriate to compromise, okay? But the problem with contests is you've actually reached a level where there's a point of where there is no agreement, where you either have to accept, okay, we agree to disagree, or you have to find a compromise. Now, when buying a house, everybody has to compromise on something, you know, unless... So you see what I mean? That one becomes simple. In moral issues, religious issues, there are certain things you can't compromise on. I mean, I can't compromise on abortion, so I can't compromise. So if I'm in I don't want this disagreement to be a contest. So to keep it from being a contest, I just have to say at that point, I'm sorry, I can't change what I believe. What I believe is a lifetime of scripture, a lifetime of this is what I believe human beings were created by God for these reasons. So I can't compromise on that. But at the contest level, on those non-moral issues, at that point, we have to look at our principles and we have to decide where we can. You know, when you hear these people that say, well, I never compromise on anything, well, then that's just pride because you actually believe you're right on every situation or that your needs, your wants outweigh everybody else's.
And that you have a persona that is more valuable than anybody else's because you're always right. And someday in life, you're going to end up against somebody who's more right than you.
and really, at the contest levels were teamwork. You know, and if you've played team sports, you realize you don't always get the ball. You know, but you have a purpose on that team. So at the contest level, you have to sometimes say, okay, I don't get my way in everything. But in this level way, this here, I can contribute this way. And you find a way to contribute, even if you're not getting everything you want. So once again, we're drawing a line here. You can't compromise on everything because that's you know, there's things you can't compromise on. But in this kind of conflict or these contests, much of the time, that's not what it's about. It's about how something's done or the amount of time you have to put into it or some sacrifice you have to give. And I don't want to do that. Okay. So we have this contest or I think my way's better. Sometimes you may have the better way. You know, there's times where, as a pastor, I've sat down with a group of people, say, on a finance committee, and we've discussed something. And the consensus is to do something a certain way. And I've said, you know what? I'm not sure that'll work. But, you know, we're working here as a team. Let's try it. And sometimes they were right. And I come back at the next meeting and say, great job, folks, you know, and then sometimes it didn't work. We come back at the meeting. I said, well, and you know, then you always have to say, well, we tried that. It didn't work. We have to come up with another solution. That's teamwork. Mm-hmm. And teamwork, sometimes you give in a little because, well, you know, we got to work as a team. And unless you're the expert on everything, which some people think they are, you can't win every contest. There's a place in the Bible where, Jacob is digging a well, and the people come up and say, that's our well, and he moves on. Now, it was his well, but the thing is that he recognized, we're going to have a blood feud here. We're going to have a problem, so I'm going to move on. That happens three times. He says, you know, and he could have fought, but he decides to move on, and the last time, God gave him a better well.
I believe that as we get into positions of leadership, you learn at which point to press your point and press your values, and at a time to to give in. Actually, you appear stronger when you yield and let other people be able to be acknowledged for what they come up with.
And that's why sometimes at the contest level, you need a mediator. You know, and sometimes I'll be maybe upset over something. I'm going to send out an email. I have a couple people I send that email to. And sometimes I'll get back, what are you picking a fight for? You know, and I think, oh, yeah, okay. This isn't going to do any good. This isn't going to solve this conflict. I'm just going to create a bigger conflict. So I have people I actually have review, especially emails, because you'll say things in emails you'd never say to somebody face-to-face. And many times I get back, why don't you just sit this aside for a couple days? And I'll come back and think, you know, it's not even that important. Why am I sending an email? Just let this go. You know, it's not that important. I'll call people sometimes and say, hey, people I trust, I need a little clarity of thought here.
Well, you know, Gary, there's a couple things. One is I don't like to mediate or talk to over things that are emotional on email. I mean, I just really, really feel like that's a bad place for it. I say, look, pick up the phone and just start talking. Number two, with a mediator, you know, we've seen things be mediated, but people are still, you need to prepare them. And I have found that in conflict resolution that I've had to prepare both sides and say, look, you need to not come across as strongly as you do. You need to yield. You need to take a look at, you know, what's it worth? And if you persist in this particular position, it's not going to go anyplace. Because we've seen mediators being paid a lot of money, you know, to come and mediate things. But if people are not prepared to be able to listen to whatever arbitration, you know, they may have, the thing really won't work out. And what we're looking for is to really find something that's a workable solution that's lasting.
Well, sometimes that's why at this level, it's so important to be able to understand the other person's viewpoint enough to state it back to them. So this is what you're saying. And they can say, yes, you understand. Okay. You could disagree with someone and they're going to be more willing to listen to you if you understand them. If you don't feel like the other person understands your point, well, then you're just going to keep arguing because, wait a minute, you don't even understand what I'm saying, you know. And you see husbands and wives do that. And then we start to, you know, you're arguing and arguing. And then it's like, wait a minute, what exactly is your viewpoint here? And then you realize you're just looking at it differently. And you have to understand the other person. And sometimes the other person will now listen to you more intently because, okay, you understand me, I'll try to understand you. Yeah. And if you don't do that, you come to the fourth level of conflict, which is fight or flight.
What's that?
I'm either going to punch you in the nose or run away from you. I'm going to do one or the other. But, you know, I just, at that point, it's over, it's so emotional. So some people just run away. They're just, okay, I just won't talk to you. Other people, they're just going to argue with you. And if it's a type of person with a certain personality, they're going to latch on to you and they're going to fight you until you give in or whatever. And so now you're in a really dysfunctional situation. And sometimes when you get to the fight or flight mode, you have to say, look, folks, let's just take a break. We'll come back a week later or something. Or we all have to stop. We have to go back. Maybe get right with God. You know, we have to go through the five basic reasons for conflict and look at ourselves, say, why am I contributing to this conflict? So that's where you just have to take a break. Because once you're in fight or flight, you know, we've all been there. You can't solve anything.
No. And the whole point of the book, The Mercy Effect, is to be able to find solutions, you know, and find solutions that go beyond just, okay, we can live, you know, in a peace, but still, you know, still have that anger, whatever. But to be able to even unpack that anger and to find a way to really bring reconciliation, because Christianity is more than just forgiveness. It's being able to be reconciled one to another, which we've already talked about.
Yes. And there's where we get to that fifth level that's so difficult, because that's what we should want to do as Christians. And when you get to the antagonism level, you can't solve the problem. The problem with an antagonist, and that's what I really learned from that book, Antagonists in the Church. I don't even know if it's still in print. I bought it many years ago. I've always encouraged pastors to find it and buy it. Because the point of the book is written by a psychologist. And he basically says, I have it easier than you pastors, because I can always tell if I have a client that's an antagonist, I can just say, I'm not going to be your doctor anymore. He says, as pastors, you don't have that option. You have to keep trying to work with them. But the point he makes in there are certain people that thrive on conflict. They must win.
Also, I think they love the fight.
And they love control. And you find in a church, you get an antagonist in the church. It's interesting. That person doesn't want to be the pastor, They want to be the power behind the pastor. They want to be the pastor's best friend. And then they want to control the pastor. They want to control what goes on. And antagonists won't back down because they know you're wrong and they're right and they must be vindicated. And once you get with an antagonist, you can't solve the problem. It's not possible unless you let them control, you let them always have their way. And antagonist is a form of very dysfunctional mental emotional process. But you see people like that. You see people that have never been able to hold down a job. I've met people that have been fired dozens of times because the boss is always wrong. And eventually they're standing there telling the boss, you're an idiot. And they get fired. They go to the next job. And sometimes it's, you know, a few months later, they're telling the boss, you're an idiot. And they get fired. And it's because I've always worked for idiots. Well, maybe it's your personality and this dysfunctional way of dealing with people. No, it's not that. They're all idiots. And there's the problem with the antagonist. Without God doing something, you can't get to them.
Well, you have to get to a point. I'm the problem. I'm the one who's the cause of this. I'm going to keep getting fired, or people won't like me, or people won't appreciate me. You know, they have all these ways in which they cast blame off from themselves onto others.
Oh, they never take responsibility. And that's why God has to do something. See, if a person's going through the five basic core reasons for conflict and dealing it within themselves, there's a time where you're going to come to some conclusion in a conflict and say, you know what? I'm causing this. Because you'll see it. The antagonist can't see it. Without God, they can't see it. They literally believe they're right at the core of their being, and they have to impose that on others. So they'll literally get to the place where they'll get down to minutia in all kinds of issues. You know, if you don't hang your coat a certain way, you're wrong. You know, I mean, everything is my way's right, your way's wrong, and they can't get along with almost anybody, especially authority. Antagonists hate authority, any authority. And eventually, they don't get along with God very well either.
Let's go on to the rest of the chapter because there are some very good pointers. In fact, we won't possibly cover them all. I advise you or I encourage you to get the book at Amazon. Go to Amazon.com, and the book is The Mercy Effect by Gary Petty. It's really very, very easy to absorb and very easy to apply. But you talk about things here that were practical solutions like praise before criticism, soft answer, etc. Let's hear about that.
These statements are very short, you know, the explanations here, because you have to really think through these things. And so part of the things I say here, when you start conflict management, first thing you have to do is look at the five levels of conflict, or not levels of conflict, but five reasons for conflict, and go back and say, where do I fit in this? What is my problem in this conflict? And then also, maybe you'll start to understand the other person's problem in the conflict, you know, because there's reason they're in conflict too. So once you start understanding those, that's when you start changing yourself to be able to go into it. But you also have to pick the time and the place very carefully. There's times and places to deal with conflict, and there's times and places that you don't. I have found that if I'm emotionally upset, don't use that time to go deal with the conflict. I won't achieve anything except making it worse. So you have to think things through. You have to wait. Sometimes I've learned to wait for the person to come to me. You wait, or I've actually prayed, God, show me the time. Show me the time and place. Because you have to be very careful how you do that. You also have to strive to make the other person know that you love them. You're not here because I'm here to beat up on you. I'm here because I want to have a better relationship and we got a problem here, you know. So because you're important to me. So they realize you're not coming to them just to somehow correct them, you know. But you're actually coming to try to deal with a problem and actually build a relationship. Then you seek to understand the issue from the other person's viewpoint before proving your point. And that must be the most difficult thing to do. And we talk about that another place in the book. We talk about listening, learning to listen, because what we usually do, I mean, we're waiting to give our viewpoint. But you let the other person go first. You let them explain so that you can actually repeat back to them in your own words, mm-hmm. This is what you mean. You know, this is what you're saying. Yes. Occasionally, a person will say, well, now that you say it, It's not completely right. I mean, they'll actually, because you understand it, sometimes you can help them see the problem. Also, sometimes when you really understand them, you come to think, oh, well, yeah, I'm causing this problem. You know, you can see, because I understand you now, I know where my problem is too. And then, and I talk about Stephen Covey in here a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, because he talks about that a lot. Praise before you criticize. That's a biblical principle. You know, say something nice. You know, you just don't sit down and say, hey, you know, I'm here because you're a jerk. Okay. you say something nice first. Seek to create solutions where you find win-win solutions where possible. Now, that's not always possible, especially if the other person is flat out wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, if the other person did something really wrong, there's no win-win. It's, I'm sorry, you're wrong, but we can make this work. I mean, you're still looking for something positive.
You want to correct something. And, you know, the person has done something very wrong, but they're still a good person. Yeah. You know, they're still a good person, and you can point it out to them about how they have been beneficial to other people in many other circumstances. But right now we want to solve something that is really hurting that particular role.
Now, as we quickly go through these, I will say you will try this with the antagonist, but it won't work because the antagonist knows he or she is right.
Okay.
You can't get them to... That's why the book, The Antagonist in the Church, once again written by a psychologist, says, you can't solve this. It's a spiritual problem. Now, he says, you pastors, sometimes you get solutions because you can bring them to God and God can change them. But you can't use any technique to change that person because it's deep in their psyche. It's who they are, that they have to control you. You've hurt my feelings and you have to pay. I've seen people hate somebody for 20 years because they got their feelings hurt over something that wasn't even that important. But until that person pays, they're unhappy. I mean, they go through every day thinking about that person needs to pay. That's an antagonist viewpoint. And you can't solve that until that person gets healed by God. You can go beg your sorry, and sometimes it's never enough. It's, you hurt me. Until you feel pain, I will never accept you.
Well, then with the antagonist, then it gets to be a matter of forgiveness, so to speak. You know, as a matter of the person has to yield. They have to come to a point of having their spirit either be found out or they come to it themselves.
Yes, it has to be something from God. That they are so self-centered. It's a form of narcissism is what it is. Mm-hmm. They have a form of narcissism that's so deep, you can't change it. And that was a shock to me. You know, as I was working through this book and thinking, and I pulled out that old book that this chapter is, or part of this past chapter is based on, and I studied it and I thought, that's right. I can't change people. I can help them change. Only God can change them. And at the antagonism level, you can't change them. There's no technique. There's nothing you can do because they're not going to listen. They won't do any technique because they just simply, they're right. And it's such an emotional thing, they can't reason through it. But the last couple of things I'll just mention here, practice the art of the soft answer, and that's, of course, from Proverbs. Some issues aren't worth fighting over. You know, this isn't a hill we're dying on, folks. Just leave this alone. So what? You know, so what that person thinks something and they're wrong. You may be absolutely right, but it won't change anything if you force them now to see, you know, something that has no importance in life. It's not worth fighting over. And then the last point to make here is peacemaking isn't appeasement. Peacemaking doesn't mean you just give up and become a doormat. You know, there are times you make a stand. Like with an antagonist, I'm not backing down. I guess we can't have a relationship. I mean, there are times you just can't have a relationship with somebody. And that's a reality. I'm sorry. I cannot have a relationship with you. And the other person, of course, at that point is saying, oh, you're the wrong one. You're a bad person. I'm here to have a relationship. And they're not. They're there to control. They're there to beat you down. They're there to hurt other people. You know, especially as a pastor, you know, I want these 8 people out of my congregation. Well, it's not your congregation. It's Jesus Christ's congregation. So let's back up here. Nope, nope. And I had a man one time. It was so prejudiced. He did not want black people in the congregation. And I tried to work with him and tried to work with him. He was such an antagonist. He was so filled with such hatred that finally one day I told him, I said, you have rejected people that God has chosen, that God made, that Jesus Christ brought into the church. I said, if you're not careful, Jesus Christ is going to reject you. He was just furious. And he found out a few months later he had cancer and he committed suicide.
But you hope that people who are toxic like this, that people who are toxic can come to a point of where they can see their toxicity. Otherwise, they will be rejected in other ways, not maybe necessarily as a brother, but they won't be able to work with committees. They won't be able to work on projects. They won't be able to work in other ways with people because they're toxic.
Well, and antagonists are very proud that they don't work well on committees, you know, because unless they're in charge, you know, and then they make everybody do what they want. They're very proud of that because they actually believe, well, I'm smarter than them. So you can't get them to work with other people. They will for a little bit until they get enough control to get their agenda, you know, and then they'll take over. That's the way they are.
Gary, this has been just absolutely fascinating talking to you. We could talk on and on about this, but I really advise you to get the book because it really goes into greater details. It has scriptural passages that will guide you through it. And I found this book to be sort of in my sight all the time at my desk because I really have used it a lot because I have a special interest in the mercy effect. In our ministerial training here, we're going to be using this book in teaching our ministers about these principles. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Always a joy having these talks.
Please write to us at podcast@ucg.org if you have any questions or if you have anything you'd like to say to Gary Petty, podcast@ucg.org. Tell your friends about Inside United. Use your favorite podcasting app on Apple or Android. And you can also easily find us on the ucg.org website. Go to the main menu line to podcast. And also, you can find this on Spotify. We're on Spotify. Just go to podcasts and search for Inside United and have your podcast come to you weekly. So thank you very much for joining us. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.